All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis.
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want.
Bad luck wind been blowing at my back. I was born to bring trouble to wherever I'm at. Got the number 13 tattooed on my neck. When the ink starts to itch, then the black will turn to red. I was born.
And welcome to Geek Stuff, episode 13.
So titled?
Well, I have a title.
Okay, what is it? Lay it on me.
It's kind of weird.
You're kind of weird. That doesn't stop us from doing this show each week. What's the title?
All right, point taken. The title is Hermes Unlucky Onslaught.
Okay, explain.
Episode 13. Hermes Unlucky Onslaught.
I don't get it.
Well, we're doing a really big piece this week on Miracle Man.
Right.
And the whole controversy and the latest, you know, bit of the controversy.
Okay.
Okay. So I went to a Miracle Man file. I looked up issue 13 in the collection.
Right.
And the title of it is Hermes.
Okay. So part one of three.
Hermes. Right. And I was trying to think of other things that are associated with the number 13.
Okay.
And everyone says that 13 is an unlucky number. I consulted with people and they said, when I said 13, what do you associate? They're like, unlucky.
Okay.
So unlucky.
Right.
So I chose unlucky.
It's Hermes, parts one unlucky. And two.
And other than that, Rachel Wood.
I know what you're talking about.
The movie 13.
Yeah.
The hot movie.
Right.
Other than that, the only other thing I could fall back on.
Oh, no.
Was last week.
It's making sense now.
We fell back on the Marvel Legends Wave 12 for Episode 12, the Apocalypse Wave. Well, Wave 13 is the Onslaught Wave of Marvel Legends. So I took from that Onslaught.
So Hermes, Unlucky Onslaught.
Hermes Unlucky Onslaught. Episode 13.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to go with it because I don't have anything else. So
that's all I got.
We're rolling with it. We'll take it. It's better than just the Apocalypse Wave.
What's our choice?
I don't think we have many at this
episode
point.
Episode 13.
Right. So going into this, which kind of doesn't really relate to the title, but maybe it does in a grossly inappropriate way. We had an awful loss this weekend. And actually, I think there were two, now that I think about it.
Two. There were.
The one that I was reading about earlier today was the loss of Tim Hildebrandt, one of the famed Hildebrandt brothers.
So the weekend was kind of unlucky for him.
One could say that, yes.
Okay.
Poor Mr. Hildebrandt died at age 67 from complications due to diabetes. Now, for those of you who don't know who the Hildebrandt brothers are, you should be ashamed of yourself. How could you call yourself a geek if you don't know who they are? But in case you don't, they are famous for their painted works of pretty much almost everything geek in some way, shape, or form. They had a lot of notoriety with a lot of Lord of the Rings pieces, a lot of Tolkien pieces early on. They did a Star Wars New Hope poster, painted Star Wars New Hope poster.
I'd like to point out something to you.
Okay.
Do you know that there is a 6-foot by 4-foot piece of Hildebrand art hanging here in the studio?
I do. Where is it? It's the Iron Man piece, isn't it?
No.
Is it the cap piece?
No. It's the Human Torch piece.
That's right.
Hanging directly behind you here in the studio.
That's right. Yeah, so we have some Hildebrand art here in the studio. And then, obviously, with the Human Torch piece, the Hildebrands also did a bunch of painted work for Marvel throughout the years. And sadly now, one of them has left us. So it's sad to say we lost a Hildebrand.
Their Tolkien work is incredible. I have that book.
It is. They're one of their posters. It's the Fellowship poster. And it's all their leaving Bag End, kind of. It's like, it's Gandalf and Merry and Frodo and Pippin, and I think there might be another character in there as well. Sam, I guess, is in there. It's one of my favorite painted Tolkien pieces. I actually have a copy of it framed hanging in my office. So,
do you?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's right above the desk next to the Harry Potter piece.
Oh. Hmm. Well, that's a terrible loss, especially, I'm sure, notwithstanding his brother Greg, certainly, because they've done most of their work together all these years.
Sure. They've always been known as the Hildebrand brothers. It's not a lot of individual.
You don't see a lot of there. Just Tim or right. Just Greg stuff. Even the piece hanging here in the studio is actually.
It's both, right?
GNT Hildebrand signed. So. Wow. Yeah. You know their studio is in New Jersey?
Yeah, I do. Actually, we know some people that are associated with that studio or friends of them in that studio.
Do we?
Yeah.
Is it the people that are associated with that show that we're advertising?
Yeah, the sci-fi fantasy show at Ducret Art School in Morristown, New Jersey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ducret. Is it Ducret? Did we decide?
I don't know. I think so.
Well, that sucks for the Hildebrand family.
It does.
Very unlucky for him.
And who else passed away? We had another passing, didn't we?
It actually happened a little bit further back. It was May 27th.
Oh, okay.
Alex Toth.
Oh, yeah.
Passed away. He died at the age of 77 working at his drawing table.
Wow.
And for those of you that don't know, Toth is well known for his work on Zorro, Eclipso, Super Friends, and other comic books.
Mm-hmm.
He did work for DC, Marvel, Warren Standard, Charlton. I mean, pretty much all the establishing companies back in the day.
Right.
As they say. And then he went into animation in 1960, and he created, any guesses? Okay. He created Space Ghost.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He created Space Ghost for Hanna-Barbera, and he also worked on projects that you might also have heard of in your youth, fantastic, like Johnny Quest,
mm-hmm.
The Herculoids.
Yep. Birdman. All that Hanna-Barbera stuff, right?
Yeah, the Super Friends, the Fantastic for those awful Hanna-Barbera Fantastic Fours. Yeah, he worked on all of those. My personal favorite stuff that he did, though, was the Zorro strip that he did for years and years, which they recently collected.
Oh, did they?
Or have been collecting volumes. Yeah, I think I might have one or two of them. But he was a great guy. He's a fantastic creator. And he will sorely be missed. He definitely led a full life in this industry. And, you know, you only realize how much the man means to the community when he's no longer here in it, I think. You know, and I think the same is probably going to be said of Tim Hildebrand after this point as well. You don't really know how much they did until after they go, which is a shame, really, because both of these gentlemen should be celebrated for their contributions to the medium.
Sure. Sure. Oh, is it my turn now? How am I supposed to follow that up?
How about something upbeat?
Something upbeat. Hold on. Let me go through. Nope. Nope. Nope.
Boy, this is an unlucky segment.
Jessica Alba mentioned Galactus recently in an interview about the Fantastic Four movie.
Did she? What'd she say?
I think her exact quote was, when asked about Galactus. I cannot bring up Galactus, Alba said. I can't believe I just said his name. Maybe he'll do an appearance. It's like, you know, he's going to give some shout outs to his peeps.
She mentioned the surfer. So.
Well, they've been toying around with the surfer for a while, but the thought or the concern was always, while it is feasible to do the surfer in some capacity, how the hell do you do Galactus? That's a daunting task.
It certainly is, but for the benefit of the audience, Galactus, big giant dude roaming around space, eating planets.
Right.
Right?
The devourer.
The devourer, right. The world devourer. Silver Surfer, one in a long line of heralds of Galactus, which basically Silver Surfer shows up at a planet. He goes, guess what?
You fucked.
You doomed. Get out because you got like 3 minutes.
Flying over to planet on his little surfboard with some salt and pepper.
Or whatever.
Sprinkling it on a planet.
That's what he's doing.
Seasoning it up for Galactus to come
the
by.
The salting surfer.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was basically a herald's job,
right?
Is to herald the coming of Galactus.
Sure.
And there have been several. I mean, there was Surfer, Fire Lord, Nova.
Mm-hmm. I can't.
I'm sure a few others.
Right.
I can't remember at the moment. But I mean, so it makes sense if Silver Surfer is going to play any kind of part in this movie, if they're going to at all adhere to the canon of the Fantastic Four and the Marvel Universe, he must in some way be connected to Galactus. How they're going to handle that, I have no idea. They're going to make that big purple hat. They're going to go to Wizard Magazine and get that costume that one of those gentlemen wears occasionally.
This is what's going to happen. Silver Surfer is going to run up to Thing, right? Thing is going to take the Silver Surfer and throw him really high in the air. And then the Silver Surfer is going to come back down, and behind him, Galactus' head is going to fall to the ground. Oh, wait.
That was awful.
It's the fastball special from X-Men.
That was terrible.
That's how you do a Sentinel.
Why would he throw the Silver Surfer?
I don't know. He's just trying to make an awful...
He doesn't need to throw the Surfer. Can fly on his board.
You think that they have to at least be considering it, or somebody pass the word to Jessica Alba about who Galactus is, if she even spoke the word. You think she reads the books?
I don't think she has any clue who he is, but
or
I
or who
think,
she is.
But yeah, but I think that if she mentioned him and was playing coy about it, that maybe in some capacity they are considering putting him in the film.
Either that, or somebody approached her one day, you know, director, somebody behind the scenes, and was like, "Say Galactus."
Yeah. And start the fervor early so we can slip in somebody else and not have Galactus.
Say he's going to have a black costume. Maybe that'll work.
Come on, Photoshop a bunch of Galactus.
Big purple and pink Galactus.
Right. Oh, boy. All right. Well, we're going to leave Galactus and Jessica Alba to the side. Move right along.
You know why I like every time you bring up Jessica Alba?
Why?
Because I get to use that hot picture of her.
Right.
In the podcast. I love that picture of her.
It is a good picture. I concur. Well, we're going to leave her aside. Stare at the picture for a little bit longer because I don't know that we have a picture for what we're going to talk about next. So we'll just leave Alba up there maybe for a little bit. So, Tim Burton and apparently Johnny Depp.
Next.
They're working on a Sweeney Todd movie.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Oh,
come Burton on. Doing a musical?
Is it going to be a musical?
I believe so.
Oh, do you?
Early rumors.
Johnny Depp sings, does
Sweeney
he?
Sweeney Todd, fantastic.
Well, Johnny Depp did sing in Crybaby.
Yeah. Did he sing in Wonka at all?
No, I don't think so.
I don't remember.
But he definitely sang Crybaby.
He did. He did sing Crybaby.
I think he sang Crybaby.
Yeah, no, he sang Crybaby.
Did they dub him?
I don't believe so. I believe that was him.
Well, if he sang in Crybaby, he did pretty well. So yeah. I don't see why he wouldn't be able to, in some way, do Sweeney Todd.
Right. Sweeney Todd is a Stephen Sondheim musical that was on Broadway for a bit.
It's on Broadway right now.
Oh, that's right. They revived it.
Awful.
It's the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. It's kind of like this maniacal murder mystery type of
would you
musical.
Like me to explain what it
sure,
is
sure go
since,
ahead
since you obviously are going to ham hand your way through the explanation
sure Sure.
There's this dude.
Sweeney
and
Todd.
Yeah, and he has a daughter.
Right.
And something happens. And he becomes a barber. And
a demon barber?
Over any no, this part I know. He's over a pie shop, and the pie shop is run by Angela Lansbury.
I'm tapping out right now.
But it's in it. Well, it was played by Angela Lansbury in the good version. And they make up this, people. Like, because there's, like, a shortage of food. It's so they decide that he's going to kill people. And they set up this thing. So when he kills people, the bodies slide downstairs. And she chops them up and makes all these pies. Swear to God, that's the story.
I know. I know.
Thanks. Thanks for passing that one over to Kevin.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, he took it away from me. I was going to leave it right where it was.
Yeah, but when I went the quick and dirty, we go to Big Kev.
That's right.
Yep. Word. So, anyway, and apparently I guess now old Timmy Burton.
Yeah, it looks like another project that Tim Burton was working on with Jim Carrey is being backburnered temporarily while he now does...
While Jim Carrey finishes his nervous breakdown?
Yeah. No, he was working on a Ripley's Believe It or Not movie with Jim Carrey, starring Jim Carrey, and apparently that's been put off for
as Ripley?
Further review, I guess, I'm sure.
That would make sense.
So now he's working on this Johnny Depp project instead.
If Johnny Depp is playing Sweeney,
mm-hmm.
That's a little odd, because Sweeney's an older feller.
Yeah, well, you know.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about
that. That was going to be my next question. Is it live action or animated, and Johnny Depp voicing it, but I guess... It's live action? Is that the
I'm guessing it's live action. I haven't heard anything official, but I'm guessing it's live action. And, you know, what they can do
crazy
with,
Tim Burton.
What they can
Who
do
knows?
With makeup nowadays, you can make Johnny Depp look a little bit older.
I know, but...
just saying.
Know. Bugs me.
I know. So, they were doing a Black Widow movie, which Lionsgate was going to be working on, which has been squashed. Because there are no good female superhero movies that are coming out, according to Lionsgate. But in the same breath, Marvel announces the possibility of doing an Emma Frost movie. So,
which, of course, would be completely out of canon because she has no backstory that doesn't contain the X-Men.
Right.
And she's never appeared in an X-Men film. Ergo,
right
out of the gate, succotash.
Right. So that's all we're going to say about that. We're going to move right on.
Can I ask you a question since we're on the topic of movies?
Sure.
And this is for both of you. Which movie are you more excited about, Spider-Man 3 or the Transformer movie? Which one are you more excited about, Fantastic?
I'm going to go with the Transformers.
And which movie are you more excited about, Matt? The Transformers movie or Spider-Man 3?
I am more excited about Spider-Man 3.
Good.
But we have no Spider-Man 3 news this week.
So you're excited about Transformers. You're excited about Spider-Man. I, too, am excited about Spider-Man. Therefore, Spider-Man wins. The end.
Right.
What was that?
2 seconds. That topic's right? Done.
15 seconds.
But in Transformers news, and I don't have it here with me tonight, but you'll be able to see it on the website or during the podcast.
Oh, I know. I know this.
The Transformers movie poster was released this week.
Oh, then I have something else.
That's why I chose Transformers to be excited about, to be honest.
Did you see that poster?
Yes.
It looks awesome.
Oh, can I tell you something
sure,
else?
Go ahead.
If you go right now to TransformersTheMovie.com,
mm-hmm.
They have a countdown clock running. Which is something like got like 20 odd days left to it. It must be the teaser trailer.
Well, rumor right now is that the teaser trailer is going to appear before, I want to say Superman, but it was last rumored to be Superman or Pirates. It could be both.
Well,
I don't know what the exact release date for Superman is, so I don't know if that's 20 some odd days away.
Did you find it fantastic?
But it's possible.
TransformersTheMovie.com.
I know that Pirates is July 4th weekend.
Does it have a clock on it?
Not at the top.
That's so weird. Huh. Maybe it's .org?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'll take a look.
But
because somebody sent me a link, and all it was a background picture and a running clock.
Yeah. Well, it could be either of those two films. Pirates of the Caribbean is probably about 20 days away. So if that rumor is true that it's going to appear before that, then there you go. Well, then let's go right into NBC's Heroes.
Heroes.
Did you watch this trailer?
I did watch the trailer.
Do you feel kind of sad after that, watching the trailer?
What, that they're ripping off so many things?
I was going to say that you wasted a minute and a half of your life.
But you know I'm going to watch it.
We're all going to watch it. We're compelled, like moths to the flame, we're compelled to watch this shit.
It's so sad on so many levels, though.
Well, let's explain what it is for people that don't know about it or who haven't heard it.
Go ahead.
NBC Heroes is a new miniseries. I think it's a miniseries, or maybe it's a regular series. It's a new regular series? I don't know. It's a new series coming out this fall on NBC. And it's about a group of individuals, regular, normal individuals, that suddenly realize they have these powers. And the tagline to it is, some people are born to be extraordinary. And NBC's little plot synopsis is, you know, they thought they were like everybody else until they woke with incredible abilities. In Japan, a lowly office worker can teleport at will. In New York, a struggling artist can paint the future. In Los Angeles, a discontented beat cop can hear the thoughts of others. Elsewhere, a high school cheerleader discovers she is unbreakable, and a single mom realizes she has a powerful alter ego. Heroes chronicles the lives of these people and the lives of others like them, whose destiny just might be saving humankind.
Hmm.
Yuck.
Well, it takes elements from so many different places.
Sure.
Like, it sounds like the 4400, which is running into its third season now on USA. It sounds like It sounds like, you know what it sounds like? What was that book? What was that book by Straczynski?
Oh, shit. What was that book?
Rising Stars.
Rising Stars. Yeah.
Sounds like Rising Stars.
Yeah, I didn't even draw that correlation, but yeah. It seems like NBC is just jumping on the superhero bandwagon with the success of all these superhero movies. X-Men 3, whether or not we liked it or you liked it, did phenomenal in the box office. It's opening weekend, and since then, I think it's only been pushed out of the number one spot now by Cars.
Sounds like this is going to be original stuff, right?
It is original.
I don't mind that. I mean, not the powers. Like that they, well, not yet.
Well,
they won't.
You can't really. It's hard to come up with new
but
powers.
But the premise is that the stories will be original stories at
right.
least. Yeah, and that I kind of appreciate because I like that they see that these things are being successful, that the movies are successful. And rather than just rehashing everything that we know already in a long serial format over TV,
right.
I kind of like that. Even if it's only a couple episodes, you know, one or two episodes each story, I think that's good to see.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch it. It's going to be a drama from what I can tell by the trailer. It's not. It doesn't look like it's too heavily action-packed, and it's definitely not a comedy.
Right.
So
I found it's TransformersMovie.com.
TransformersMovie.com.
Okay. Right. And there is a countdown up there currently at 20 days, 17 hours and change. It says their world, their war, our world. Transformers, July 4th, 2007. And you can click on the bottom to register for their, I guess it's a newsletter. It says register for updates. And the whole site itself is kind of a takeoff on the poster that we saw.
Right.
It's a mechanical eye looking over Earth. You think that's supposed to be Optimus?
Actually, no. From what I understand, that's supposed to be a Decepticon, I believe. I'm going to say that it's Megatron.
Yeah, it's either Optimus or Megatron. It's kind of, you know, that has that blocky structure around the eye that...
The shape of the brow and the color scheme kind of drew me towards Megatron.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that 20 days from now, we're going to see some kind of teaser trailer.
Yeah, well, I think 20 days from now is probably very close to July 4th, 2006. So a year before, maybe they have some sort of quick teaser that they're going to put together. They've already begun some sort of principal photography and stuff like that. And they, you know, the cast is pretty fleshed out. So,
yeah, what's encouraging to see, though, is the little look into, you know, insight into the design that you actually see looks good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have confidence in that.
Yeah, I am really excited about that movie. I really do look forward to it. I mean, I look forward to Spider-Man a little bit more only because I'm a big Spider-Man fan. But when I heard the Transformers movie announced, it was something I really wanted to get behind in hopes that it was done right. I think Michael Bay and DreamWorks, I think that's certainly a good, you know, team to tackle the project.
Spielberg.
And yeah, so I think it'll be good. I think it'll be good. So we have a spoiler here.
Spoiler alert.
So for those of you who don't want to know this bit of news about Marvel Comics and Marvel Civil War and Spider-Man, fast forward, turn it off, turn the volume down, go take a piss, go get something to eat, etc., etc. In the issue of Civil War that just came out. The last panel of the issue, Spider-Man reveals himself to the press, to the public. He takes off his mask and he reveals himself to the public, which is huge. And he says one thing, and it's just, any questions? And that's it.
Is that the last panel?
That's the last panel.
Here it is right here. Fantastic.
I see that.
I kind of have mixed feelings about this. First of all, I don't really like the Civil War storyline. So it's hard for me to get behind anything that is born out of the Civil War storyline. Second of all, I really, really appreciated the fact that throughout the years, no matter how many other Marvel characters Peter Parker had been associated with, affiliated with, worked with, fought against, his identity, with a few exceptions, really remained a secret. You know, he kept it from the X-Men. He kept it from, you know, he kept it from the Fantastic Four. He kept it from all of these other characters. So it really is kind of momentous that he's doing this. But on the same aspect, I kind of like that it was a secret. And it's a shame to see that go away.
It's actually, he actually reveals it the page before the last page.
Well.
And what's funny about it is the panel right beneath it. Well, he says, my name is Peter Parker and I've been Spider-Man since I was 15 years old. The panel right below it, you see, who is it, Robbie Robertson, mm-hmm. some of the other people at the Daily Bugle, which is the paper that Peter Parker has worked for since he was 15 years old. They're jumbling papers and one of them says, Mr. Jameson? It looks like Jameson passed out. Oh, yeah, he's behind the desk in a few panels earlier. They're trying to talk to him, and it looks like Grant is trying to ask him a question, Mr. Jameson, and he goes, Miss Grant, you even think about asking me what I want for breakfast, and you're fired, little lady, because he's about to reveal who he is. And it looks like the panel right below that, like Jameson just passes out. That's really funny. That's really ballsy.
In a statement, Marvel was noted as saying that this is arguably the most shocking event in comic book history.
Yep, shocked. The most shocking event. The death of Superman shocked nobody. The breaking of Batman was not shocking.
Well,
no.
You know what, though?
North Star being gay wasn't shocking.
Superman and Batman, those things were inevitably reversible. Superman came back to life. Batman walked again, you know, and became Batman again, and he took on the mantle.
Uh-huh.
Spider-Man unmasking himself, there's not really much way to go back, unless, of course, they somehow erase the Civil War continuity.
But you don't mention North Star.
Well, that's not really, that one's not really.
How's he going back?
You can't.
I have never heard that one.
Is he going back to
chicks? That is true, but no, you're right. That one can't go back. But the other two, they inevitably were reversible. So that kind of does nullify them a little bit.
I think this is interesting. You say, like, it happens, and then it makes you think, what are the ramifications of it actually happening?
Right.
Within that story, you know, not only within that storyline, but just superheroes revealing themselves in general. And I think it's kind of what they touched on in the second movie when he gets unmasked and there's people who see him. And then it's, you know, a couple seconds go by and it's kind of like, well, so what? Now they say we won't say anything, right? That's
right.
Them kind of pledging their allegiance to him.
Which is bullshit. Because in a second,
there'd be
30,000 cameras going and Inquirer sales.
I'd be like, hello, National Enquirer. Click.
Yeah.
I got a photo for you.
Click.
Well, they're very clear about showing that there's no cameras there, no cell phones.
Right,
that doesn't happen.
Don't worry.
It makes
we
you
won't
believe
tell.
That the worst thing that can happen is somebody goes back on their little promise to Peter Parker and says to an artist or someone, he's brown hair, short, young. But really that describes like a third of the population of the world.
Right.
You know, so.
Now, I'm glad you actually brought that up because this really kind of brings out Marvel's arrogance, right? Which is another thing that frustrates me about that. That scene in Spider-Man 2 is probably one of the most controversial scenes in that movie because.
Or as I like to call it, the bad scene.
Yeah. So many people were angered by that scene because it was so uncharacteristic and it was so unlike what Spider-Man does.
Bullshit.
And it almost Spider-Man was really almost always about this keeping his identity secret to protect those around him and protect the ones that he loved. And now Marvel is saying, yeah, we did it in a movie. You were pissed off about it. Man, we're going to do it in the book.
In a way, and I can't believe I'm saying this, in a way, it makes more sense to do it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with this storyline that's going on.
It makes sense in the context of the storyline, yes.
Right.
Yeah, it also has a bigger bang behind it, too, if it's been, the foundation has been laid that Spider-Man uses his anonymity to protect those around him. But I guess that's kind of the second question is now what? You know, are they people going to start attacking his family members and affiliates and things like that?
I
hope so.
That's what's so baffling. I mean, you know, and I'm concerned. What I'm concerned is that it's a typical kind of Marvel snap judgment that once Civil War is over, how are they going to address it? Are they going to address it?
They've already done this.
What do you mean?
With Daredevil. Daredevil's been out for over a year.
Right.
Yeah, and he's just getting his ass handed to him and people who know him and so on and so forth.
Right.
And I think he's in jail now.
I think the impact with Spider-Man is going to be a little bit bigger, though.
Obviously. But that's not my point. My point is that the elements of what can be done have already been experimented with in another book.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Marvel treats this after Civil War and when they've moved on to a new storyline and how it will affect continuity going forward.
You use the C word. Continuity.
Yes, no, nothing.
He's disgusted by your use of the term continuity when referring to Marvel Comics. So disgusted, in fact, that he cannot utter a word.
Right. Well, what's your story? I know you've got something over there that you've been eager to share
gay superheroes.
Ooh, nice tie-in.
Yeah.
Was Onslaught gay?
No.
I'm trying to tie it into the title of the episode.
Onslaught was okay, not gay. Batwoman is returning to DC Comics.
Right.
And she's gay.
Okay, now is this a new Batwoman or is this a coming out of the already existing Batwoman?
Okay. The current one is Batgirl.
Right.
And this is not that character. This is definitely a different character.
Okay, so it's a new character, Batwoman, and she's gay.
Right. Her name is Kate Kane. They're calling her Kate Kane. She's a wealthy socialite, you know, hot lesbian. What can you say?
About it, huh? So DC going the now. Does DC have any other characters that are currently out?
I have no idea, but that's not the point here.
Okay.
The point here is that this is being done. In my opinion, it's purely being done for shock value. This is X-Men syndrome here, starting at DC, or it potentially could be. Because now we have yet another Batman character doing business in Gotham City.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I think DC is trying to bring in these current social issues and things like that. And I think that bringing in a gay character, they're hoping to perhaps, you know, capture a new audience. So I kind of understand that. The problem is, and I agree with you bringing in another Batman or Bat-related character, but the problem is who else in the DC universe could you really do it with where it would have as big an impact? If what you're trying to do is really draw...
My point is not to do it at all. Why do you need to placate to the list to the readership? I don't think
because they buy the books.
Placate's not even the right word here. Yeah, but what do you think? Lesbians are going to run out and pick up, and Batwoman's not getting her own book, mind you.
She's going to be a character in Batman.
She's a character in 52, starting with issue 11, and then she'll be in. Dan DiDio likened it to the way that Marvel introduced the Punisher. First, he was in Amazing Spider-Man. They popped up in Daredevil stories,
right?
And interest build it. You know, built up.
She'll
and
be
then,
peppered around the DC universe.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So there's not any long range plans for her per se, at least none they're mentioning. They got Alex Ross to redesign the look of the character.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
The year is 2006, and this seems so inconsequential right now. This is just a side note that they could have included and not said this character is gay. I mean, there's got to be other characters out there that they could just, you know, write it into the story that happens to be the story and you accept. If it were 1998, maybe it would have more of an impact. If it were 1980, there'd be a larger impact. But it doesn't matter.
Well, see, there's now, but word. Here's where I disagree with you.
There's a
I
word
think
that covers
by,
this.
I think I that by introducing a new character that's gay, there's less of an impact than taking a pre-existing character that's been around for years and suddenly outing them.
Now, that would be interesting, to be honest.
Well, if it would you be interesting, but the impact would be...
Well, they've done it.
But the impact would be greater. So if the point is that it really shouldn't be such an impact, and it is 2006 and blah, 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 then making it a whole new character kind of sneaks the gay topic in there without having a huge ripple effect or impact effect on pre-existing world.
Yeah, I know what it is. It's contrived. It's contrived. We're making her gay because we don't have a gay character.
We don't have a gay character.
Gay character will get us press. Like Blue Beetle. Blue Beetle is now a Hispanic character, and they make a big deal about the fact that he's Hispanic because we don't have a lot of Hispanic characters, so we're going to make sure everyone knows that he's Hispanic. This bullshit about Batwoman was on CNN.
Well,
for God's sake, with Dan DiDio's smiling mug on there going, yeah. That's all it is. Her sexuality has nothing whatsoever to do with anything. Is it going to affect the way that she fights crime or anything? No. It's just something else. And apparently, according to my understanding, is that
pillow fight with Catwoman.
She conceals her sexuality from people around her and from her family. So she's not even an out gay character. So right there, you're going to have GLAAD all up in arms. Oh, she can't be out? Why can't she be out? Why can't she go right up to Wonder Woman and go, la, la, la? Why?
Oh, God. Ew.
Why? That's what GLAAD's going to say. And that's it. The whole point of it is that she's gay in name only. You know, she's gay. She's a gay character. And how much of the gay are they actually going to do? Probably nothing. She's not out to her family. She's not out to the people around her. Who's she out to?
If they have panels that are stereotypically gay, it's going to offend somebody. If they don't address it,
I'm not saying it's that going they to be should show full on.
No, that
you know.
No. Yeah,
Catwoman.
I just think it's like welcome to 2006. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter it only matters in the sense that we can get publicity out of this.
You're right. You are right.
And that really bugs me.
You're right.
And it should.
It's contrived. It's not done for any purpose other than publicity, which is stupid.
Do you buy Batman?
You're right. And you're always right.
I don't think I'm always right, but I think I'm right about this. You know, I'm telling you, it's going to, in the end, it's not going to be anything at all.
Probably. Well, look, it's DC doing the DC thing. DC's been slowly but surely catching the Marvel bug and slowly but surely kind of tiptoeing in Marvel's footsteps and down a similar path. And this is just the latest in that line of thinking.
And she's a socialite also. Of course. And she has a bat thing and she's fighting crime, which means she's running in the same circles as Bruce Wayne, which means they're gonna ham-handedly create some history between them.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, the only thing about this that even rings remotely pleasant is the fact that Alex Ross is creating the character, or Alex Ross is creating the look of the character. Right. That's the only thing remotely. And I'm telling you, I'm looking at her right now. She is Batgirl. I mean, old style Batgirl.
Right.
Right. Red hair coming out of her costume. Right. It looks like she has red hair. She's Batwoman, the old Batwoman, like the 40s kind of Batwoman that they had.
Right. Right.
You know, in a sense, and she's wearing Batman Beyond.
Yeah, I saw that. The
black
Batman
costume, red bat in the middle, there. Red utility belt, red boots, red gloves. Inside her cape is red.
Right.
I mean, it's just.
I don't know. Maybe DC should just wrap it up and leave it behind. And
yeah, maybe.
And speaking of wrapping up, we're gonna wrap this little bit up here, take a break, and we'll come back.
You know he doesn't like it when you say...
I didn't say news. I didn't say current events. All I said was we're going to wrap it up, take a little break, come back.
He doesn't like it when you say wrap it up, though.
Start spreading the news.
Kev, we're going to be at the Big Apple Comic Book Art, Toy, and Sci-Fi Expo on June 24th and 25th.
Oh, God. Can we just call it Big Apple Con?
Fine. Big Apple Con will be at the Penn Plaza Pavilion, located at 401 7th Ave at 33rd Street.
You can come check out the show. There'll be plenty of dealers of all types. Comic book dealers, toy dealers, some rare film dealers, all manner of things that you're looking for, you're going to find at the Big Apple Con. Not to mention the great celebrity guests that always appear at Big Apple Con. And this show will include Steven Seagal and the legend Rowdy Roddy Piper.
That's right. So go check it out at BigAppleCon.com.
I'm sitting next to Piper at that show, I hope. I'll make a brand new start of it
in old New York. If I can.
Bacon rocks in the hot sun. I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won. I needed money cause I had.
And we're back.
We are.
I'm very excited about this topic.
It's a good topic.
We're going to dive right in with both feet.
Okay, let's go.
We are talking today about creator rights, character rights.
Right.
And the example that we've picked is the most controversial comics issue in the world today.
Hands down.
Has been going on for almost 20 years.
Easy. More than that, probably.
More than 20 years.
Yeah, probably 40 years.
So let's talk about Miracle Man.
Right.
Miracle Man was a character who was created in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
He was created to replace Captain Marvel that we know as Shazam.
Right.
Who Shazam was being published by Fawcett and reprinted in the United Kingdom by a company called L. Miller and Son.
Okay.
Since they could no longer publish this character, they asked this guy, Mick Anglo, to create a character just like him.
Uh-huh.
He came up with Marvel Man.
Okay.
Which is, you know, close enough to the character. It had a lot of the same character appeal and so on and so forth. So they can go ahead and publish.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
And they do a bunch of books through the 50s. And in 1959, Britain allows American comics to come in the country, which they hadn't done since 1939.
Okay.
So now you have, which would be the Silver Age.
Yes, easy.
Color American real comics start coming into the UK. There's no longer really a need for black and white reprints and so on and so forth. And since the bulk of L. Miller and Sons publishing is that, they're kind of losing money. Marvel Man Family. They have a whole group of these books.
Right.
They all start going down.
Nice sound effect.
Yeah. It's finally canceled outright in 1963.
Okay.
L. Miller and Sons go out of business in 1966. They sell the printing plates and what we presume to be the rights to the characters.
Right.
To Alan Klass Limited.
Okay.
Alan was a guy who was doing horror and science fiction stories. He reprinted some of Len Miller's stuff, but not a lot. And this kind of left everybody out of the loop. This deal is kind of on the down low, so not a lot of people know about this deal, which is part of the problem here.
Right.
In 1960, before all that happened, 1960, Mick Anglo decides that he's going to tell these stories and call it Captain Miracle.
Okay.
Okay, so now you have Captain Miracle. He prints the book himself. And Anglo claims that he owns Marvel Man and has owned Marvel Man all that time. But there's in the British comic industry in the 50s and 60s, there's no such thing as creator-owned rights.
Right.
Right. So we move along.
Okay.
Okay. It kind of lies dormant for a while. And in the 80s, Warrior magazine.
Almost 20 years it lay dormant.
Yeah. Warrior magazine reintroduces Marvel Man. A fella by the name of Dez Skin.
Right.
Nice name.
Oof.
Who's the editor of Warrior, contacts Alan Moore, who's going to write it, Gary right. Leach,
right.
who's going to draw it, and they split the profits four ways. Moore, Leach, and Skin each get 30%.
Right.
And Quality Communications, who is the publisher of Warrior, gets 10%.
Okay.
Okay? Still with me?
I'm there.
Okay. There is a bit of confusion that happens because no one knows how Skin gets the rights to Marvel Man.
Right.
Right? So there's a bunch of conflicting things. Skin thought it was in the public domain. At one point he said he purchased the rights from the creator, Mick Anglo. There was also another thing that said after they had started publishing the character in Warrior that he paid off Anglo. And the prevailing or one of the lesser appreciated theories was the fact that he just took the character.
Yeah. Why
that
not?
He said, no one else is using him. Who owns him? I don't know. I'm
going to use him. Sure. Why not? Good character. Great story. Let's use him.
And actually that's the truth because okay. Skin admits that Dez Skin, nice yeah. name. Skin admits that in Kimoda, which is a Miracle Man companion book, which kind of traces the history of the character.
Okay.
In the story sense, and I think in the right sense as well. It came out a few years ago. Very interesting book. If you're interested in the comics industry and how it works and how, in this case, it doesn't work, creator-owned rights, you should pick it up. It's called Kimoda. Good luck finding it. If you do, you should buy it. Okay. Pretty tough book to come by.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as far as they know, Alan Moore and Gary Leach, who are working on the book when it's in Warrior,
mm-hmm.
as far as they know, Skin has the rights, so they're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
Gary decides he's leaving the book, and okay. they're bringing Alan Davis on.
Wow.
They rework the deal, right, so that everybody's giving up a little something, but everybody's keeping something. So they're basically, they're cutting Quality Communications out
right.
of the deal here. Alan Davis, Alan Moore, and Dez Skin each give part of the ownership to Davis.
Okay.
So in the end, Skin gets 10%, which I'm sure he must have cut Quality some of that money. Moore, Davis, and Leach get 30%.
Right.
With the understanding that they will own, obviously, I guess, the original artwork and the original scripts and so on and so forth. We don't know still at this point whether Skin actually owns the rights, but he's giving them away left and right, isn't he?
Sure. Well, they're not his to give, so he doesn't lose anything by giving them.
Right. So now you have Marvel Man appearing right. in a book in the UK called Warrior. It's kind of a compilation magazine, right. I think. It's kind of an anthology book. I right. could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. To complicate things, Marvel in 1983 threatens to sue them if they keep calling the character Marvel Man because they don't want Marvel attached to anything that isn't a Marvel property.
Okay.
They've gone through this with Shazam.
Right.
They, you know, there was who was Captain Marvel originally, as we mentioned earlier. They've gone through that, and now Alan Moore and Alan Davis are already using a clone of the character in a Marvel book, which they have now renamed Miracle Man.
Okay.
So okay.
here's the Miracle
there's
Man.
So there's a Marvel Man duplicate in Marvel UK's Captain Britain book called Miracle Man.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So that killed the strip in Warrior. Issue 21 was the last issue that Miracle Man appeared in Warrior. issue Warrior issue 21.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, Skin reprints letters from Marvel lawyers in Warrior's final two issues, which I think is really funny.
That is funny.
1985. Eclipse Comics buys the rights from Dez Skin, nice name, and starts reprinting Marvel Man. But they retitle it Miracle Man so Marvel doesn't sue them.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Alan Davis, who at this point has had a big fight with Alan Moore, wants nothing to do with Alan Moore or the situation.
Okay.
Gives his rights to Gary Leach.
Okay, so now Gary Leach is like...
that they are now reprinting, right? Got it? Okay. And that pretty much encompasses the first 16 issues done by Eclipse Comics. Eclipse believed they own the rights to print the character. So when Moore completes his story in issue 16, and Eclipse decides they want to do more issues, Moore gives his 30% of the character to Neil Gaiman, okay, who is going to continue writing the book.
Right. This is where it gets a little hairy.
Gaiman says, I'm also going to cut in the artist Mark Buckingham, so there's some side deal worked out there.
Okay.
1994, Eclipse goes bankrupt.
Right.
Bye-bye, Eclipse. They had some good books, too.
Right.
The last published Miracle Man issue was number 24.
Right.
And it was in 1994, and 25 was done, ready to go, never got printed. And Gaiman had also approved a spinoff also, which never saw the light of day as well.
Okay.
1996.
Okay.
Here we go. It's like bing, 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 bing.
Right.
1996, Todd McFarlane purchases Eclipse creative assets for $40,000. For $40,000, you and I should have purchased their assets.
Hell yes. If I can get a DeLorean someplace with a flux capacitor, I'm going back to 95.
96.
Well, 96, you know, give me some time to get the money together.
Oh, oh yeah. Maybe we could work with our alter selves. Well, anyway.
Paradox, right. Paradox.
McFarlane, it is said, McFarlane buys this because he wants the rights to Miracle Man.
Sure.
And all the rest of the characters are incidental.
Sure.
And that's really the case because there was some rumor that he planned on doing some anthologies like Todd's Twisted Tales or Todd's Alien Worlds where he was going to use those characters. The only character ever to end up in a McFarlane book was the Heap.
Right.
Remember the Heap?
I do. And his figures.
And the action figure.
Awesome.
Very, very awesome. McFarlane has plans to do something with Miracle Man, but Gaiman pops up and says, you don't own the character, I do.
Or at least a portion of it.
Right. And then this, of course, is right in the middle of this whole Neil Gaiman created. In 1993, Gaiman created the characters Angela, Medieval Spawn, and Cagliostro. We'll call him Cog. For the Spawn comic book by McFarlane. And he said that he owned the rights to those characters and said he had a written agreement that he owned the rights to the characters and so on right. and so forth. In exchange for the rights to those characters, Neil was willing to give up the rights to those characters back to Todd just for his 30% of Miracle Man if Todd planned on doing anything. The reprint rights alone would have netted Neil a lot of money at 30%.
Right. And at this point in the story, Todd really isn't a bad guy yet. Todd is doing what he thinks is legitimate. He's purchasing characters right. and rights legitimately.
Right. He has also, at this point, sent all the films, all the printing plates, all the Miracle Man stuff
right.
you need to print or reprint these books to to Neil.
Okay.
Todd has sent all of it to Neil. It's sitting in Neil's basement today as we speak.
Right.
It's all there.
Jeez.
In 2001, McFarlane introduces Mike Moran, who right. is Miracle Man's alter ego, in Hellspawn issue 8.
Okay.
With the intention of returning Miracle Man in issue 13.
Okay.
But this never happens.
Right.
Because Neil pops up and says, no, you don't own him. I own a third of him. You need my permission.
Well, with that Hellspawn thing, wasn't there just a graphic novel that came out or a collection that came out this week?
Collection came out this week. It was Hellspawn 1 through 10.
Okay.
I flipped through it.
Right.
I think they altered issue 8.
They took out the Mike Moran character?
I think so. I think they, I don't know what exactly they did. I have yet to compare and contrast the two.
Okay.
But once I do, I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Okay. So, In order to clear up this whole Miracle Man mess, in 2002, Gaiman forms Marvel and Miracles Limited Liability Company, which the entire goal of the company is to clear up the Miracle Man rights issue.
Okay.
He sues McFarlane.
Good for him.
McFarlane, in turn, being a douche, sues him. Counter-sues him.
For what exactly?
For the rights to Angela, Cog, and Medieval Spawn.
So a lawsuit that's really frivolous and has no merit, because it's not like Neil Gaiman is using these characters actively in anything.
Right. So Neil produces his piece of paper that says, here's my rights to the characters, and Todd loses.
Right. Okay.
And then he loses the appeal.
Good.
Right?
Okay, good.
So we move on. Gaiman wants the rights to Miracle Man because he wants to reprint Miracle Man, and well, he should, because not only will he gain a bucket load of money, it's a damn good story.
Right.
If you're a fan of Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman, I've read it. I'm telling you, it's brilliant, brilliant stuff. Even Fantastic, who we've made a fan of The Watchmen and mm-hmm. Alan Moore, would really appreciate this book.
I'll have to pick it up.
Good hopefully, luck finding it. Hopefully before you're dead, they'll have reprinted it and we'll all be able to read it again. His intent, Neil's intent, not Fantastic's, Neil Gaiman's intent is to revert the character back to Marvel Man, and ready? Marvel Comics has agreed, of course, that they will reprint all past material and reintroduce Miracle Man into, presumably not the Marvel Universe, perhaps into some sort of other verse, its own verse, I don't know.
Right.
To me, it seems more logical that it would go in Vertigo, which is DC, but the deal's with Marvel, so who the hell knows?
Right.
And of course, this comes all under the leadership of your friend and mine, Joe Crapsada.
Right.
Because he would say anything to get Neil Gaiman to write a book for him.
Sure.
So in 2002, Neil does write a book for him called
1602.
Right. And all the profits from 1602, 1602 trade, 1602 statues, which they did, all those profits go to Marvel and Miracles Limited Liability Company in order to fight for the rights to Miracle Man.
Okay.
Okay. Now we get snaky. 2003, Todd solicits a Miracle Man statue.
Right.
Which is a hunk of shit.
Yeah, that's
the coloring is wrong. The sculpting is subpar. For McFarlane to say the sculpting is subpar is incredible.
Right.
The statue is terrible.
The pose is
you're probably
awful.
Looking at it right now on the podcast, or if you're checking out the home site, BigKevsGeekStuff.com, you'll see the picture of the awful Miracle Man statue. On top of that, to one-up it, he goes to San Diego Comic-Con in 2003 with a PVC version of the Miracle Man statue.
Okay.
Right? In response to this, Gaiman, who feels he has the rights, authorizes Randy Bowen Designs, to produce a Miracle Man statue, which we have here in the studio.
Right. Okay.
It's perfect.
It's awesome.
It is absolutely a perfect representation of the character, spot on perfection.
What you would expect to get from Randy
right.
Bowen.
And you're looking at that probably right now in the same places. Now, the only other thing to concern Miracle Man, really is a few things. That statue, the Bowen one, comes out in 2004. Also in 2004, the A1 sketchbook is released, including art from original Miracle Man penciler Gary Leach.
Okay.
Which contains 4 Miracle Man related pinups, although they don't say Miracle Man for obvious reasons, because who the hell knows? A variant sketchbook was also produced that had a Miracle Man cover and a Kid Miracle Man back cover by Gary Leach.
Okay.
So that's floating out there with Gary Leach thinking that he owns part of the character. And I think that
sure.
we would mostly agree to that so far. And of course, Spawn 150 comes out. Todd puts him in there as a replacement for Cog, as a slap in the face to Neil Gaiman.
Really just a slap in the face. Really just solidifying that douche mentality.
So as of right now, the characters, no one knows still. This is not settled. Dez Skin, nice name, claims that to possess written evidence that all shares of the character that Eclipse purchased revert back to the original creators, since Miracle Man had not been published for a number of years, which I presume means it goes back to the the Miller Company,
right,
who owned it originally, presumably. But don't forget, Miller sold those rights to Alan Klass. And since right. no one knows the specifics of that deal, it seems to me that if that's the case, that Alan Klass, or the estate of Alan Klass, or if Alan, if he's still alive, owns the rights to Miracle Man. At least that's the way I'm reading it here.
Hmm.
Anglo claims that he has owned the rights the entire time and that he owns the character. He created the character, but there's no creator-owned rights in the 50s and 60s in the United Kingdom.
Right.
So does he or doesn't he? You're talking about now two different continents, two different sets of laws, and so on and so forth. It's so completely up in the air, and it seems like it's calmed down until today.
Okay.
Today, I walk into one of our local toy watering holes, and I pick up this.
Wow.
This would be Man of Miracles.
That's a Spawn figure, isn't it?
Spawn Evolutions, the 29th Spawn series, features a character called Man of Miracles, which, for all intents and purposes, is Miracle Man. Yeah. He has the Miracle Man logo on his chest. He's wearing the costume.
It's Miracle Man with a jacket
With a jacket on. He's in the same retarded pose that the awful McFarlane statue is in.
Solidifying McFarlane yet again being an ass.
Right. So now McFarlane has once again brought this to everybody's attention. So what does this mean?
I don't think anybody knows. I think it's still a mess.
So pretty much Todd is now making money on this character.
Again.
Again. And he doesn't or does own the rights without the rights being settled. So here's my question to conclude. Why the fuck hasn't somebody reprinted this book?
What I don't understand is, if McFarlane is being so brazen about this, why isn't he trying to reprint it?
Because
other than Neil has all the stuff.
Neil has all the stuff. That's why. Yeah. And I think, to Neil's credit, Neil has the stuff and wants to do it right. He wants to sort out who owns what, and he wants to make sure that when the book does get reprinted, and it seems like it probably will, all of it.
Right.
All of the Marvel Man, Miracle Man, blah, 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 whoever, and many incarnations, when it does get reprinted, that the money is going to the right people.
Right.
Whether it's Dez Skin, whether it's Anglo, whether it's Gary Leach, whether it's Alan Davis, whether it's Alan Moore. Well, Alan Moore kind of, I don't need it kind of attitude. Whether it's Neil himself. Whoever should get money from this should get money from this. I think they just need to sit in a fucking room and say, all right, what? There's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of us, six of us alive or estates or whatever, and Marvel Comics, who's going to do the reprinting. That's it. Divide it up. Everyone gets 20%. Bye-bye. See you later. It's done. And we get an awesome book and an awesome character back in the goddamn comics world.
You know, it ain't going to go that easy because McFarlane's name is still pegged in there somehow.
Well, somehow I think there's enough of a paper trail to eliminate Todd.
We'll see.
I think.
We'll see. Well, if you're really interested in this and you kind of want to go back and look at some of the points we may have glossed over a little bit.
And get a few more, maybe more details. We're kind of just going through it.
Sure, because this really is a lengthy
Yeah, there's a lot of levels and a lot of comments made by Neil and Todd. And the comments by Neil are fantastic. If you can find those, they're amazing.
Right. I would recommend going to the Wikipedia and doing a search on Miracle Man. The article there is simply fantastic, and it's very detailed, and it really lays out a lot of the information that you need to know to understand this a little bit more fully.
Right. And I hope to God that we see it in the next 5 years that this book is reprinted. I'm telling you, we could so use a book of this caliber to be reprinted for guys like Fantastic.
Sure. Well, I've never actually read it.
And I know you haven't read it either. It was reprinted one time in 3 volumes. You can't touch them for under $200.
Right.
Or more, $250.
And that's even if you can find them.
If you can find them. They're never on sale. Put them on, put it in eBay, see what comes up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Rock and roll. Showtime.
Matt, on July 29th, from 10 to 6, the Ducrete School of Art is hosting Comics Sci-Fi Fantasy Day.
That's right. Your free admission to this show includes drawing lessons, portfolio reviews, tons of vendors, lots of comics and toys.
In addition to that, you can meet their guest artists who include Mark Romanowski from Magic the Gathering, DC Comics, and Warcraft, William O'Connor, also from Magic the Gathering and Star Wars, and Tommy Castillo, who has worked on George Romero books and Batman.
That's right. This show's going to be at the Ducrete School of Art, located at 1030 Central Avenue in Plainfield, New Jersey, 07060. And you can go to www.ducrete.edu for more information.
I sure hope we're saying the name of the school right. Is it Ducrete?
If not, it's Ducrete.edu.
I just want the book reprinted. I don't care. I don't even care if Marvel does
you
it. I just want it reprinted.
Just let
because
it go.
It's that good. You know what it's like? It's like if there was some dispute about the Watchmen.
Shut up.
And we couldn't read that.
Shut up.
Fine, I shut up.
Yeah, shut up.
Shut up so I can talk about the new Nintendo DS Lite that I just bought.
Nice.
This came out a couple days ago.
Oh, good. A topic I'm very well versed in.
You are very well pronounced in this topic as well.
It's true.
And by that, I mean not versed at all.
Not so much. No. Well,
go ahead.
Well, why don't you fill him in as to what the DS Lite is? Because okay. He obviously does not know.
DS Lite.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Tell Kev.
The Nintendo DS, DS for dual screen, is the second coming of Nintendo's DS.
Okay.
Dual screen handheld, which is basically a clamshell Game Boy type, portable gaming device.
Right.
Plays Game Boy Advance games, which was the generation of Game Boys prior to it. When it originally came out, Nintendo kind of said that it's an alternate product to the Game Boy. And actually, after DS was released, they came out with another Game Boy called Game Boy Micro. So they've basically inundated the market with a whole bunch of different handhelds out there. And this is the newest incarnation, and in my opinion, the best.
Wait. I'm confused.
Okay.
Are you saying that this DS Lite that has come out is the sequel to the DS?
It's the same exact circuitry on, well, not the same exact circuitry, but the hardware is the same on the inside, capable of playing the same games, doing all the same stuff.
All right.
It's
so,
been redesigned and upgraded.
All right. So let me see. They put out a Game Boy. They put out some other Game Boy. Then they put out this DS thing.
Right.
Then they put out some other Game Boy. And a couple years later, now they decide to redo this DS thing.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long either.
How long has it been?
I'm going to say a year and a half, and that's just kind of
winging
it.
A year and a half?
Okay. Now, it really what it's done, it's keeping the DS alive. So for someone now interested in the DS, you're not going to buy the DS. You're going to buy the DS Lite. It's kind of like, you remember when they had the NES system and then they put out the Super NES, but they kind of reworked the NES a little bit, right?
Yeah, they made it a little top-loading.
It was a little smaller and it was like a different color. That's kind of what it is. It's kind of like, but with the DS Lite, they've really made it an easier, friendlier, portable unit.
Right, it's a little bit more significant than that release too, that re-release of the NES, because they fixed all the things that were complaints from the public, generally seen to be design flaws. Like it was kind of bulky. Uh-huh. The screens, the way you hold it, it opens like a clamshell, and the screens are both viewed at different angles. It's just the way the clamshell is. You have to view them at different angles. So no one, you're never going to have the perfect viewing angle. What they did was improved on the brightness and the contrast and viewable angle that you can view the screen at. And it makes it...
So is it still that clamshell?
Yeah, it's still clamshell like that. They redesigned the outside to be really sleek. It's very reminiscent of Apple's MacBook or iBook, the white one.
Uh-huh.
It's really, closes very tightly. It's balanced well, which the first one wasn't. They redesigned where the stylus gets located. The D-pad is less clicky. There's a little bit more play in it, like it's a kind of like a Genesis or Super Nintendo one instead of a more tactile button push that the old DS had.
Okay. What was the price point on the DS?
You know, I didn't buy it. I think it was, I'm going to say like 130 to 150, somewhere in there.
Okay, so when the DS came out, 130 to 150.
Right.
The DS Lite, now which has just hit, I think June 11th was the official release date, so that's only a couple days.
Yeah, I got it at the Nintendo World Store in Rockefeller Center for $129.99.
Yeah, it's going for between $120 and $129, which I think is significant also. It's also cheaper than its previous incarnation, and it's better worked.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty significant also.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo, again, is doing it right.
Now let me just ask, does it have complete backwards compatibility?
Yes.
Complete. I mean, I'd say like 99.9. There's some Game Boy Advance games that had like some tilt function and things like that where if you put the game in the bottom, which is where that slot B, the Game Boy Advance slot is now, all the controls are kind of reversed. And there's probably some games. There always are problems, maybe like one or two.
But to the DS, it's backwards compatible. It's fully backwards compatible.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think the other one of the other
so no one's features, pardon me for interrupting. No one is losing out.
No. Okay. Unless you just bought the old DS
right now on June 10th.
Yeah,
right.
And then you decide to
like your friend was like, "Hey, I'm going to get rid of my DS. You want to give me like $100 for it?" And you're like, "Yeah, dude, fucking DS for $100."
Right.
And then, like, the next day, and he takes your 100 and his 30
well,
and goes and buys him a good new
if
one?
If you were somewhat awake, you would notice that it had already been released in Japan and was available through the usual import avenues.
Right.
And DS is going up against Sony's PSP, PlayStation Portable, right, as, you know, handhelds right now.
You're giving a lot of credit to the fictional character that I just created. The well, guy was duped out of a DS and $100. I mean,
that fool.
You really do give him a lot of
credit.
But
the DS in general was doing really well, and it's killing Sony's PSP. Now, Sony's PSP has a lot going for it. It has the processing power. It has a nice bright screen, wide screen. It plays MP3s and other online functionality. It has a whole bunch of bells and whistles, but it has these glaring flaws, which the DS doesn't right now. And that's, number one, its load time is just ridiculous.
That's the one that plays a little DVDs?
It plays, UMDs. Sony's proprietary little format. It's kind of like a CD inside of a cartridge that you put in there.
Wrapped in a riddle inside an enigma.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's kind of where it stands right now. Now, they have all movies coming out, and if you go to Best Buy or Walmart or wherever, you'll see these UMD movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the time, the price point is just ridiculous. It's like $30.
Well, actually, expensive.
An interesting point about that is that a lot of the movie companies have significantly cut down the number of titles going to UMD, particularly because they're not selling and the price point is as expensive or more expensive than its DVD counterpart.
And right, you could have to confirm this for me, but they don't come with bonuses most of the time, right?
No, there? Because the capacity on the discs is just enough to hold the movie. So there are no bells. There's no audio commentary for the most part. They might like do a deleted scene, like a couple of deleted scenes, but like the menus are like,
wow,
real tone. I mean, they're real bare bones, these UMDs.
Right.
But back to the DS Lite. The DS Lite has some really, really great functionality. Like a friend of mine has it. He just picked it up the other day when it came out, and he was telling me how.
Is your friend real or a creation?
No, he's real. Oh, he's real. A friend from when I was growing up. He was playing Mario Kart with it, with his girlfriend, and they only needed the one cartridge
right,
to play it because the Wi-Fi between she has a DS and he has a DS Lite.
Which, exhibiting their interoperability, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple multiplayer modes, ways to play multiplayer. You can play single card, which is what you just explained.
Right.
You know, he'll send a little version of the game over to her, maybe like a couple tracks or a couple riders and things like that. Usually has a little bit more limited functionality than if she had the cartridge as well and he had the cart, that's the second way to play is multi-card, and usually get the full multiplayer functionality there. And then you can actually play online some of the games,
right,
like Tetris, Mario Kart, Metroid Prime Hunters, which I picked up with it as well, and that's like a whole nother story, because I took a look at that and tried out the demo when it first came out, and it was really cumbersome to play, I thought. You move with the D-pad using your left hand, you fire with your left finger, your index finger on the L button, and you look around by putting the stylus, which if somebody doesn't know anything about the DS, the bottom screen is actually a touch screen that you can either use your finger or supplied stylus with to look around. So it kind of emulates that mouse and keyboard first-person shooter effect that you have going in games like Quake 3 and Doom, and
right.
or Quake 4 now, I guess. And it works really well. Like, it really, really got me.
Well, I've heard they've tweaked the stylus a bit too, right? They've made it a little bigger, haven't they?
I think so it's a little bit wider and a little bit shorter.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier to hold, less likely to slip out or drop.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still kind of a hurdle.
What are we talking about?
This is the what?
The stylus, Kev.
A little shorter, a little wider.
Stylus.
Slip out and drop.
Stylus.
Okay, I'm just checking.
I heard the ladies like it better.
It's getting a little...
Always in the gutter.
Saucy?
Saucy over here. What are we talking about?
But yeah, overall, a big improvement. Great price point. Oh, the second drawback that PSP has is it eats batteries. Because it's using that mechanical drive... to spin the disc and to power that really bright screen. I mean, I don't know how the battery life is. I've heard it's like 3 to 6 hours and you're watching movies. It's spinning the whole time. But with the DS and now the DS Lite, its battery life is almost an afterthought. I mean, I plug it in, don't even think about it, play it for like 12 hours. And then
it charges?
Yeah, it charges. It has a rechargeable battery built within. It actually is replaceable, a little screw in there. But it's great.
Yeah, and again, I think the important part is Nintendo really, really significantly knowing what they're doing in this market, really hitting it home.
Yeah, you know, I think they're at that spot now, but originally, I'm not so sure the DS. I mean, I saw the DS, and I was like, oh, what's this two-screen gimmick style stylus thing? And I don't think they really knew that it was going to be as successful as it is.
Well, but the important part is I think they recognized a flaw in it and acted quickly on it and corrected it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's something that Sony doesn't do. So, that's all. DS Lite. Pick it up. It's out now. Probably $120,
$130. Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's bigkevsgeekstuff.com. I fucking hate you guys.
And we're back to wrap up episode 13, Hermes Unlucky Onslaught.
Right. Before we get right into that wrap-up, I just want to address one quick thing. We actually did have a correction from last week's episode that we got, so I want to address it because we've made a habit of addressing it. It was pointed out that we made some mistakes when talking about The Preacher.
Okay.
Graphic novels and who the creative team was.
Who pointed these out?
It would be one of a close friend of the show.
Okay.
One Mr. Fan? Ken. Yeah.
A fan. Okay.
Yes. It was pointed out that Glenn Fabry was the cover artist, Steve Dillon was the interior artist, and Garth Ennis was the writer. We kind of overlooked Steve Dillon when we talked about The Preacher.
Our apologies to Steve Dillon. That would be my fault. I'm the one that said Glenn Fabry was the artist. I did remember after the fact that he was the cover artist. Oh. I do have a wicked sketch of Preacher from him.
Well, that's what the fans are for.
But now back to the excitement that is, or was, Hermes Unlucky Onslaught.
Not that exciting when we started off tonight's episode with the passing of two great legends in the geek world. One would be Tim Hildebrandt, and the other would be...
Alex Toth.
Correct. And it's a shame to see them go, and hopefully their work will be remembered for a long time coming.
It certainly will.
Right. Then, unfortunately, Jessica Alba had to bring up what they're calling the G word. Galactus? Yeah, Galactus.
Don't care. Can use the picture.
Exactly. Can use the picture.
We also talked about the return of a DC Comics character, Batwoman.
Right.
Who is gay, because that will draw publicity to her. She does not have her own book, nor are there plans for her to have her own book, but she will be peppered throughout the DC universe. And we're all kind of ick about it.
Right. We also hit upon this Johnny Depp, Tim Burton project. We're not going to get into the pies and the people and the cannibalism and all that crazy stuff. It's Sweeney Todd. So you can check that out. That's kind of new. So we'll have more later on that. Then we hit upon NBC's series coming out later this fall. Heroes, it's called. It's a super powered drama type of show with these people coming into their powers.
Of many other shows, 4400, reminiscent also of Rising Stars by Michael Straczynski, and probably six or seven, by the time it comes out, six or seven other notable sources.
Right. I'm going to completely and totally gloss over the Emma Frost Black Widow shit, because that's what it is. Shit. And I'm going to go right into the Peter Parker Civil War, pulling off his mask. Everybody knows who he is.
Telling the world.
What's going to happen next? Pretty significant in the comic book world, especially the Marvel world, especially if you're a Spider-Man fan.
And then we leapt with both feet into the most fascinating legal battle ever in the comics industry, in my opinion, and that is who owns the rights to Miracle Man or Marvel Man. Or whatever you like to call him. I call him Miracle Man because that's what I, when I read them, he was right. Miracle Man. Is it Neil Gaiman? Is it Todd McFarlane? Is it Dez Skin? Nice name. is it all of these? Is it none of these? Is it Alan Cass? We don't know, and apparently neither do they, and thus we periodically are reminded that somebody owns it by having products like statues and most recently the Man of Miracles Spawn action figure, yet we still don't have goddamn reprints of the books. It's a goddamn shame, and I think it really needs to have them just all put in a room and just settled out once and for all.
And then finally, me and Mr. Fantastic, knowledgeable about these video game things, Kevin, not so much. We talked about the DS Lite. I think it's great. I think Nintendo was very smart about how they handled it, and I'm happy to see it, and I'm probably very interested in picking one up.
It's got all those cute games.
Yeah, I know. You don't like the
cute games. Isn't that the one that had the cat game?
No, Nintendog.
Nintendog?
Yeah.
That was a cute game, I heard.
It was a cute game.
I don't like cute games. That's why I generally stay away from Nintendo.
Right.
That's how you're going to wrap that up?
And on that note, we cue the music.
That look wind been blowing on my back. I was born to bring trouble wherever I'm at. Got a number 13 tattooed on my neck. That ink starts to itch like gon' turn to red. I was born in the soul of misery.